Welcome to the Spark Girls podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Char Barrett.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J. Welcome to the Spark.
Welcome.
Hey. You've just got us this week, which is, of course, way better than having a guest because we're awesome.
I'm sure the guests won't like to hear that.
But I would never say that to a guest.
Biased.
Oh, listen to you making a pun. So what Cheryl is talking about is our topic for the day, which is putting your marketing biases aside. And this is something that we've seen in a few forums and groups around the place on the internet about people talking about the things that they thought that they didn't like or didn't want to do, and then they try it and then it turns out to be something that they actually
it works.
Yeah. Whether or not you like it. It works.
And we spend a lot of time working out the word bias, biases and bias thing too.
Yeah.
To get whether to that
it's
point.
A biases.
I'm just saying.
Bias.
Yeah. Still might be wrong. But
and just to raise a technical point here, Merriam-Webster says you can spell it with one S or two for biased. So just, you know.
Oh, well, that's good because I didn't
choose
like
your.
I think I'd either spell option. It with two S's.
Merriam-Webster.
That looks wrong.
I don't know.
Yeah. Who's she? Anyway. Okay.
So anyway, back to the actual topic. So like what we're like for me, and I know this is, but the first thing that came to mind was pop-ups on websites, because that is a long, like people talk about, and even I don't really like them, but they work, right? So there's this idea that, oh, I'm not going to have a pop-up on my author website because they're awful and I hate them when I go to another website. But actually, in terms of conversion and getting people to sign up to your author newsletter, they really work and they make it even more likely that people will sign up. So what are you going to go with? This idea that you hate pop-ups, or actually something that works to get more people on your list and is practical and is useful to you as an author, you know?
And actually, we're not promoting any one way to do anything.
No.
We're just saying this is how you might perceive that. And
that was
that's your take on it, right? I think we all feel like that about pop-ups, don't we?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. Maybe people out there love them, but
But I think it's really important to understand being black and white can be detrimental.
Yes.
You know, and especially in this business, because what didn't work last month could conceivably work in 2 months' time. And we four have all come across that many times. And I think to just turn around and go, I will never do that because it doesn't work that way, not in this game, you know.
And especially if it's, I will never do that because somebody told me it doesn't work. Right, that's actually not a good enough reason. That's great advice, especially when you're starting out, not to get bogged down trying everything. But when you're looking around for a new way of upping your income or, I don't know, just another way of promoting yourself, unless you try it and try it properly by doing it well, to the best of your ability, then you don't know. You don't know that it's not going to work for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it can even be the same as what people use for their keywords when loading books and things like that as well. You know, so they'll say, you know, or what targets you use for Amazon ads. You could have like it's so specific to that particular book that it's not that people are kind of gatekeeping the information, but that it's not relevant, you know. Even if you've got two cozy mysteries, they can still differ in terms of maybe how you would word Amazon ads or what targets you'd use and that kind of thing. But one I've seen a lot lately, and I don't know whether it's the prevalence of illustrated covers kind of being so out there, particularly in bookstores, that I noticed when I was in the States last year, was on covers, like for romance, you see some of the newer romance authors that I've seen in forums saying, I can't stand those clinch covers. I hate couple covers. I'm sick of people. I'm sick of, you know, shirtless men on a paranormal, you know, and I kind of get it. It feels a little bit, again, to me, a little bit superior in some ways and a bit judgy of other authors. And note, don't go into forums and tell people that their covers suck, just side note. but again, very often those covers are the ones that are working for that particular subgenre.
Totally.
Not always, but very often they are.
I mean, I'm going round three on my covers, you know, and that's because, you know, you never get it right the first time, and trends change, you know.
They really do. Yeah.
So that's almost two things. It's kind of like there's the one, on the one hand, it's like not trying something. But then on the other hand, there's like, this is the cover and I'm not moving and staying with this one thing that, even if it's not working anymore, like, so maybe it's,
I love this cover.
Yeah. That's the worst, right? Like, I've got that. I love my original Ringmaster covers, but, and they needed a change. They needed, you know, so there's
that can be painful, really painful, painful on the pocket as well as on the heart.
Yeah. But there's also a certain amount of arrogance attached to some of that sort of stuff.
That's what I meant by that, some of it reeks of superiority.
I loved my covers and I was just like, well, I'm not changing them.
No, I don't think that's arrogance. I would say that's
because you think that you know that's right, but it's not working for you, so they need to change. Yeah. So therefore, you know, you've got to be open in this game. Yeah. You've got to be able to swings and you know, I think the most important thing to say is be careful who you listen to.
Yeah.
You know, and make sure that, you know, we always say this, right? Make sure who you listen to is feeding you the right information.
Mm. You know, and even then, it could be the wrong information for you.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
That's all of which to say is, I would say, take on a limited smorgasbord, not a whole lot, because you would drive yourself completely bonkers if you listen to everybody and try and do everybody. But maybe pick two or three people that have the track record behind what they're saying, aside from us as well, because, you know, we obviously make that list, just saying. And try and kind of get a cross-section of those, and often you'll find a common thread, if not the specifics, a common thread. And I would still stand by this, and I'm showing my own bias here, is always beware of the person that says they do everything differently and they're the one with the answers. They're the one with the golden key or the golden wand or the golden ticket or the golden hoo-ha.
Because there could be lots of different ways. I mean, what we've learned on the golden hoo-ha, that, what we've learned on the podcast is that there are lots of different people making things work in lots of different ways. Mm. And just because it hasn't worked previously doesn't mean it can't work for someone else in it, you know. So I think it's more that you don't trust the person who says my way is the one right way and everyone else is wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. Personally, like,
it's, and there's lots of different. If you try it and it works, then great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people out there who will just tell you stuff and who don't. Like, I think the other thing is you want to find someone who can back it up as well, right? Like, so we had Mark Dawson, for example. He's selling millions of books every year. So you can kind of go, actually, maybe he's someone I should listen to because he actually is there. He does his own ads. He's making the money on books. He writes good, you know, like that's who you want to listen to versus someone who maybe hasn't sold that many books and has sort of switched into whatever, selling courses and has not got the I want to say golden hoo-ha again to back it up, but it's not the right word. Just to make
it, could
this
be a, golden I balls just saying, but
no, it's not the right word. I'm just being silly. But you know what I mean, like, who's got the kind of expertise and knowledge and the something behind them to sell it on, you know.
Seriously, the thing is, like, people like Mark, he doesn't push it, like, he's not someone who preaches. You know, and that's the thing. He does a business, gets on and does his stuff, you know. And there's people like that out there who, you know, don't preach, and they impart with good information. Yeah. And those are the ones you want to listen to.
I think in some ways now, we're into our eighth year of podcasting, in some ways there's almost too much information out there now. I totally get that. It must be like an avalanche of, we've kind of come up from the early days and it's sort of growing with us, and we've been able to take on more. But if you're diving into this, you know, for the first year or the second year or whatever, I can totally see that there is an overwhelm.
I disagree. I feel like I now know too much. And I've stopped listening to a lot of the stuff I used to listen to.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because I was feeling overwhelmed. So I was sort of like, you know, you say that I could probably take on more information, but it feels like there's so much of it out there that I find it hard to kind of decide where to go. I just have to narrow it up.
You two love to learn.
Yeah.
I mean, Char, you're always doing courses and reading and you're two turtles, whereas Cher and I, too much is too much, you know. Like for me, if I need to know something, I'll go and learn it, but otherwise I don't learn.
For me, I've got input and learner, if you know about Clifton Strengths. I've got input and learner in my top five. So I'm all about bringing all the information.
Yeah, mine are one and two.
Yeah. And so for me, having new information is awesome. Like, I love it. But even I, with that high kind of level of that, I have, in fact, narrowed my bandwidth quite significantly in the last couple of years because it isn't, you know.
See, I've got tortoise and ostrich. So... it all just works brilliantly.
You just went, See, it works.
Which I feel like
is the opposite of what we were trying to talk about. This is it's actually trying new things and opening up. But
that's not to say I don't try new things. Mm. If something's not working, and I'm sure that she's the same, if something's not working with us, then we go out and look for an answer as to why. I just don't go hunting for more information that just overloads me, you know.
I'm like meerkat and chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee? What does a chimpanzee do?
Digging with the stick.
Yeah.
I like that.
Oh, that's funny.
So another thing is I think that's really important to kind of separate your writer self out from the reader, and that can be very, very difficult. And again, I've seen this in a lot of forums where people are saying, it's just the same book being written over and over again. And I want to, you know, do something different. I want a romance that's they're both going to die at the end kind of thing, you know, do a Titanic or whatever. But, you know, I'm sick of those romances, you know, but you might be convinced that this is the new way for romance. And I think you've got to put yourself in the reader's shoes more than the writer's shoes at this point. You know, if you want to write that, go for it, but don't market it as a romance. And readers want more of the same. That's why Harlequin category romances, yes, they've changed over the years, but fundamentally it's offering, you know, particularly the presents, it's offering that international kind of glamorous sort of soap opera-esque type drama with not normal people, if you like. And it's the fantasy, and they're selling the fantasy of that. And they've been doing this for decades and decades and decades.
It's their brand.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and it's the same with any romances.
Or any genre.
You might be tired of seeing things, but other people aren't, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and channeling back to marketing again, you know, I mean, if we had a dollar for every time we've heard someone say, well, I'm not doing Amazon ads and I'm not doing Facebook ads. Mm. End of story.
Yeah.
You know, and yet we all know that's what sells books.
Yeah. And right. I think.
So it is hard. It is really hard. But to learning one of those things will very likely increase your sales. I'm not going to say it will, because there's a lot of factors contributing to selling a book, like covers and book and blurb and rah, rah, rah. But advertising in this market, like Mark Dawson said last week, is a must.
I think that so, and you know, sadly, it's the reality is that, you know, whereas 2010, 2012, you could probably put a book out, and back in the day when BookBub was free to advertise it, that promote your book and that kind of thing. The market has matured since then.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the readership is growing. You know, there's still more and more Amazon readers, Kindle Unlimited readers, other platform readers out there. So it just is. I think that's the other point about marketing biases too. If you're reading books, like self-publishing books, just check the date that they'll publish, because I think the advice given in 2015 or 2014 or even 2000, frankly, and 18 is different to the fundamentals of marketing is still the same. You've got, you know, a well-packaged, great product, but how you promote that has changed. You know, blogs are less important. What if they call them blog tours, that kind of thing, you know. Again, For some genres, it might work, but it's not the be-all and the end-all anymore.
No. These days, it might be TikTok influencers or Instagram influencers or something. It's always about finding the influencer in your thing.
Exactly.
And,
And I think it's also being comfortable as well. I mean, it's good to push yourself. It's good to get outside of your comfort zone. But if something is making you anxious, you know, like incredibly anxious or stopping you from writing, then that's perhaps not the best platform for you, whatever you've chosen. And maybe it's time to look at something else. I don't say that lightly because, I've struggled over the years with Facebook. And it has caused me a lot of anxiety, and I'm just getting back into it now. But
there's a balance, right?
Trying
new things, not if it causes you too high a level of anxiety. I think when we're talking about like the biases thing, it's when you refuse to try something because you know that it's not going to work for your books or something. Yeah. Whereas actually you don't know until you try. Mm. And I know Cheryl, and I know she would have tried Facebook, and that she does put her best into things, and she does do it as much as, you know, to the best of her ability. That's how she would have done it. And if it hasn't worked or it's made her anxious, she's pulled back off of it, you know, because that's what's best for her. But we're not talking about that kind of stuff. I feel like we're talking about people not trying stuff just because they think it's not going to work and not because they know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you had any examples of that? Like, can you guys think of anything that you've done that someone said to you don't do and then you've done it and it's worked? Put you completely on the spot there. They're both like,
people tell you. I mean, there's loads of things like you shouldn't have to market your book or advertise your book because if it's good enough, it will sell without that. You know,
it's down less prevalent these days.
Yeah, it used to be
like a throwaway comment, you know, especially for people that aren't selling books. You know, like when you tell people that you're an author and that you do marketing, you know, some people can have that opinion even now that actually, why would you need to advertise? Everybody advertises everything, every product that they're selling, everybody does, if they want to make substantial income.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, opinions are like golden hoo-has. Just everyone's got one.
Have we all got golden hoo-has? I don't know. I think you just threw that in so you can say golden hoo-ha.
I wanted to say golden hoo-ha. Yeah.
I can think of a case. So for me, there was an Amazon advertising challenge, and at the time, the leader of this particular challenge was encouraging lots and lots and lots of Amazon ads to be made. And I just, for me, it just didn't resonate. It was the throw the spaghetti at the wall approach. And I saw a lot of people struggling in that because of that. And that maybe didn't give Amazon ads a fair shake because of that particular way they were led to them, if you like, or the particular way they were taught. So I think going back to advertising, if a particular advertising platform isn't working for you, also consider how it is you're approaching making the ads as well, because that can be something. It might not actually be the platform. It might be how you're interacting with a platform and using it. The other thing I think too is, again, going back to what I was saying before about the self-publishing books, just checking the date. Same thing with advertising courses, because back in the day, maybe 3 years ago, you didn't do an Amazon auto ad, which is where Amazon decides who to show your ad to, because it was not that great. Now machine learning has got so good, and in our episode with Mark that was on before this one, he agreed that it's really improved. And so again, it's what you learned on a course maybe 3 years ago isn't quite now. A lot of them are updated. Mark's ones, for example, kept completely up to date. But just consider the source as well, not just on who's saying it, but also when those particular guidelines were kind of made, because things are improving in terms of that kind of thing. Same for Facebook as well.
Yeah. So your bias might be there because you've tried it a certain way and it's not working.
And I totally get it, because when you've thrown money particularly and energy and hope at something and it hasn't worked, it's real easy to either say, oh, you know, that was wrong, or it doesn't work for my books. But it might be of how you might be trying to drive a four-wheel drive in kind of first gear or something, you know.
I'm really guilty of that. If something freaks me out, or if someone says something, I'll listen to them. And who I see as someone who has got the knowledge, and that if they say something, I'll listen to it. But it's hard. I think the really good thing is if you've got someone around you, like I've got you guys, and so I can tell you guys, and you'll go, don't be silly, give it a go, you know. Like, and unless you've got someone you really trust in your corner, like a friend or a writer buddy you can run through, it can be quite daunting to get all this information out there. Like if you Google Amazon ads, right, for example, how many things come up on Amazon, on Google, you know? There's so many. How do you know which is the right one if you just learn?
Exactly.
You know, and that's why these groups are vital, I think, you know, like, you know, I can't even think of any on the top of my head.
I can think of a really good one if you want to join, and it's the Spa Girl Superstars self-publishing masterwork, which you join through our Patreon.
So get onto some forums and with a whole lot of people. Don't just take one person's, you know,
information. It's brainstorming, actually, when I get onto those groups, because sometimes people ask a question and you're like, oh, yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of it in that way, or I hadn't tried it in that way, or that's a good target, you know, for me to try. Or these people clearly know what they're doing in this genre at this time.
And I think the romance community as a whole has got just so much knowledge, so much information, so many Facebook groups, so many places you can go with reputable people who will give you good information. It's just weeding your way through to find the ones that actually work for you.
So I think you want somebody that's up there that's doing really, really well, because that's proof. That's proof in all ways. But also that you can align your work too, that you know, they're very similar, same kind of tropes, definitely the same genre. And then, you know, you've got a great springboard, haven't you?
Yeah.
By using their knowledge.
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
Yeah.
And stepping out of your comfort zone, you know, too. It's all very well and good to just say, I can't, I won't, this is not me. But in this game, you can't do that.
An example of that might be TikTok, right?
Yeah.
Like when I first heard of TikTok, I was like, oh, it's that terrible web, you know, that terrible social media platform. I'm never doing that. It sounds awful. And then I sort of eased my way into it when I started hearing about people doing well on TikTok, and it was kind of, and then actually I really enjoy looking at TikTok stuff now. Like it's, I kind of enjoy going on there. I haven't posted and stuff. I've been a bit slack over Christmas and stuff, but it's not the platform I imagined in my head before I was on there, if that makes sense. You know, there's a lot of people out there who go, oh, social media, it's awful, it sucks, it's this terrible vacuum of whatever. But actually once you go on there, you might find that it's not what you thought it was and that you might enjoy it. And I feel like that happens to me quite often in my professional life, but also my personal life, where I think, oh, I would never do that. And then I end up doing it and actually enjoying it. And so I think that's important too. Yeah. Like, and
not
I feel
getting
like it's
overwhelmed.
A mindset. I think it's a mindset thing sometimes too, when you need to look at yourself and go, am I poo-pooing this idea, or because it's actually not something that vibes with me and I'm intuitively not doing it? Or is it because I'm afraid to do it because it seems a bit scary? I don't really know that much about it and I'm a bit overwhelmed. And maybe if that's the second, if the second option is it, then maybe there's a way of kind of breaking it down and making it less overwhelming. Like for TikTok, just joining the platform and having a look around and seeing what it's about and not actually diving right in and doing videos, that might be a good first step, and just seeing if it's something you might like, and then figuring it out. And I remember when I first went on TikTok, I was like, I don't get this. Why? This is really weird, and I don't understand it. And then I'd watched a few more videos, and then I got addicted to watching them. You know, like it's sort of, it's, you've got to give yourself a bit of time also, is kind of what I'm trying to say. So even if, so if you have this bias and you think, oh, this is terrible, I'm never going to want to do this thing, you've got to get in there, give yourself some time to figure it out and then, maybe do it. I don't know.
Agreed. Yeah. Another bias area that I think we've all kind of realized ourselves, particularly as we've listened to guests that we've had on talking about newsletters, and this is something that kind of hit me between the eyeballs, was that we assume as the author that our newsletter subs have been on there since the beginning. So they know all about our books, they know all our series, they've read, you know. And what we're not taking account is that so-and-so could have joined the week prior and they didn't realise that you had these other three series, for example. And so you've got to keep re-reminding them and reselling those previous, your backlist in your newsletters. Don't assume that people are on your newsletter list that know everything out. Also, don't assume that just because you've told them about a new release last week that they will remember it or they know it or they've even seen it or... So it's okay to keep repeating information. And that for me was a good reminder, I think, you know.
Another one is I don't want to interrupt them or I don't want to send my email out too often because I'll disturb them and they don't want to hear about me. But often people want to hear about you and that's why they're on the list and they've become used to having more often emails from people and that's how you get the connection with them. So there's and a lot of little stories we tell ourselves.
Absolutely. And another bias I think too is, you know, I don't read newsletters, so why would anybody else sign up? You know, I've got too many. And again, that's how your experience, but it's not other people's experience necessarily. So that's another one that I see a lot for a lot of people that don't want to do author newsletters. And I even if you just have a new release alert list, for example, you keep that, you know, it's the only thing. You can't own social media. You can own that email list. That's your readers, whether it's two people or 2 million people, it's a good thing to have. And the other thing I've seen bias in is the pricing of books. You know, people wouldn't pay that, or I wouldn't pay that. I wouldn't pay that for an ebook box set of, you know, $15.99. I wouldn't want a hardcover. If somebody's on my ARC list, they're not going to buy my book. Why would they? Because it's free. And I think, you know, just for example, working with Wendy's ARC team few years ago, you know, the amount of people on her ARC team that first of all obviously got the book early, then they would read it often on KU, and then often they would buy the paperback as well. So you just, you know, it's keep an open mind is what we're saying here. Keep an open mind.
You see some
mind.
Of those people on TikTok who've got like those entire big bookshelves of books that, and they have them color coded. And these people who just love books.
And hardcovers are a thing. I think TikTok again has really promoted that sort of the visual aspect of books that maybe we have lost a little with the closing of a lot of the local bookstores and things. So it's seeing a resurgence in a different way.
Yeah. And I know for me, like I don't do this with fiction books, but with nonfiction books, I'll buy the book on ebook and then go, oh, I can't read it properly. So I'll buy it in a physical paperback and then I'll start reading and then I'll be like, oh no, this would be really good to listen to when I'm on my walks. And so I get the audiobook. So I end up with like I'll buy the audiobook and then want the physical one to write notes in or something. You know, like I end up with three copies in different formats of the same book. And I've got multiple books that exactly like that. So I imagine there's people who do the same thing maybe with fiction books that they love. So don't assume.
Don't assume.
Yeah.
It always surprises me when somebody buys my book after they've had the ARC. It always surprises me. It thrills me actually.
It's a lovely validation, you know, lovely confirmation. And the other thing I've seen a lot too is when Wendy would have, and I assume it's still going on, when you would have like your book and BookBub for free, the amount of people that would read that book through KU rather than getting it free on BookBub.
Which
again,
you know. It hasn't cost them anything extra, but by them doing that, they're supporting you as an author.
And quite a lot, they'll actually say, oh, I read your book in KU and I bought it now, you know, or something like that, which I think, you know, that's so cool.
Yeah. So I think be careful of, and again, it's a bias, but be careful of lumping all KU readers into the one, they'll never buy books, you know, or they'll never, you know, just be real careful of that. They yeah. will all.
And on that book,
hear, hear the word all in something, or they all.
Or must.
Yeah. Must and all, be very little flag waving, maybe consider.
And, well, the thing with like BookBub was, for me, was a real mental block. It was like, okay, you've got to, if you're going to have a BookBub, it should be for a price on the book, 99 cents, $1.99, whatever. But yeah. as soon as I put my books on BookBub for free for however long, for the day, for the email newsletter went out, I got way more downloads, way more page reads, way more, you know, read through. For me, that was a real turning point in sales. Was yeah. just putting yeah. that book, going for a free BookBub.
Yeah, it's interesting, eh? Because we tell ourselves this, and it's all. And I think the thing with this is that there will be stories that everyone is telling themselves that are different to other people, right? So yeah. we've all got these little. Oh, I would never do that because da da da. And it's. And like an example of BookBub as well, for me, it's like, oh, I'll never get a BookBub. So but then I don't apply for it. So, of course, I'm never going to yeah. get a BookBub because I don't apply. Yeah. yeah, like it's 100% certain I'm not going to get one because I don't apply. But, you know, so there's that kind of thinking. But so I think it's not just a matter of telling people these are all the kind of potential ones, but actually telling people to, like, you need to stop and take a look at yourself and think, are there any things that I think I'm never going to do this because it won't work for me? Like, and actually
yeah.
stop and take stock of that and go,
yeah.
is that really true? Is that mm. something you need to maybe push back against? Because I think there's a lot of stuff where we stop ourselves from doing it because we go, never work for me. I can't do that kind of thing. I couldn't post on TikTok, or I couldn't apply for a BookBub, or I couldn't send out a newsletter once a week because that's not me. But maybe it is you, and you're just not giving yourself a chance. You're not, yeah, you're holding yourself small.
It's different from marketing, but, you know, I've never really been to a book signing. I've signed books, but and so this year when Rare Melbourne came up, I was like, I looked at it for ages, and I was like, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And then I just went ahead and did it. And, you know,
I
was already.
What's Rare, Wendy?
Oh, sorry. It's a reader author experience where you have to, the readers pay to go into the Melbourne exhibition, whatever centre. And so they come in, there's 200 authors, there's thousands of readers, it's 2 days, and you just are in there and you're signing books. And if they want to buy books, if you've got books there, if not, you're just signing, you've got swag. So yeah, it's a real immersive experience. And
how does it make you feel?
Yeah, what makes me feel good is that I was going to be quite happy if I had one pre-order, but as it turned out, now I've had lots, and that's been awesome. And like, I'm terrified. Like, I would be lying.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Terrified. That's what Cheryl was looking for, Wendy.
So, yeah, terrified. I'm making my daughter go with me, who is my business manager, and she's a lot tougher than me and on the outside. And she, just having that one person, like,
yes.
it's like Cheryl and I always go to conference together and always have, because yeah. you've got that one person, you know, like, who you can make you feel brave. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's going to be a real experience for me. But the reactions from people emailing me and messaging me and going, oh, I'm so excited, I can't wait to meet
you
know, one of my favourite authors and rah, rah, rah.
Oh.
No one's more surprised than me, you know. Like,
yeah. so I'm and that wasn't how
that.
You felt She's about it in the beginning, yeah. right? Like, in the beginning, no. you were convinced that no one was going to become,
no, well,
and
just,
why would anyone want to, you
I
know, and now
talk,
you're getting all this.
You know, like, oh, yeah. I'm going, you know, but I know that it's not a big deal, but I just want to experience it. You know, like, that's so me. Just talk
I'll sit at the table at the
down.
Back
yeah.
and just talk play on my phone, do Wordle.
Nobody knows me.
You know, like, so... Yeah,
hey, but kudos to you, because it's not easy putting yourself out there in public, where a lot of us like to be behind screens for a very good reason, that we're introverts. So, you know.
And the other example is us when we went, so during COVID, we, because we only ever used to put the audio out, and then
it's true.
And then because we didn't want anyone to see our faces, and we were like, oh no, faces for radio, rah, rah, rah. Yeah. And now every week, got our
video. We might have golden hoo-has, but they're not on public display.
No,
we don't want them. And now every week for the last 3 years almost now, that goes up on YouTube. Forever. And so everyone can see our faces. And it's like, I mean, we're all kind of used to it now, but when that first started happening and we were
I'm pretty sure it's going to be our 3 year anniversary in a few weeks' time.
I mean, if you go back to our first podcast, I mean, we talked about podcasting for ages, right? We wrote out scripts.
We practiced.
We sat there and did them.
They were here in front of us.
It was just horrific. Like, we'll never release those out into the universe. But, you know, until you actually leap in and do, you just don't know how it's going to work for you.
And then it becomes a part of your life.
Yeah.
So it's not just, it's almost an act of faith. It's and not in a religious way, but in yourself. Like, you have to just, and it's a,
it's reprogramming.
I also feel like this is something that resonates with me, but I feel like you can either hold yourself small, and I felt like I was holding myself small for a long time, like tight in a box, because I didn't want to get out of that box because it wasn't safe. And pushing yourself out of that box feels unsafe, and it feels hard, and it feels like it's all wrong. But actually, you feel so much better, and you're so much happier, and you learn that you can actually do things. And you can go to Rare, and there will be lots of pre-orders, and you can put your face on, you know, like there's so many things that you can do if you just let yourself. And those biases are there holding you down, and maybe you need to just.
It's like the first time that you actually admit to somebody that you are an author or a writer, but I prefer the word author.
Yeah.
So I am an author. The first time you say that, it's kind of like, oh, my gosh, it's a big call. But isn't that what we are?
Yeah,
we shouldn't be afraid, and we shouldn't be embarrassed. Or I don't know what it is, but we've all been there, I think.
And it's your how you react to, because I used to be really embarrassed. People would say, oh, what do you do? And I'd be like, oh, I'm a writer. And oh, what do you write? And I would always be like, oh, just not much, you know, like, oh, and not want to talk about it.
It's not your thing.
Yeah. And so they would, it's not going to be your thing. I'm not going to tell you.
Isn't that just bias that so-and-so wouldn't read?
No. Yeah.
And don't read them.
But they react to how you react, right? So if you're standing there going, I write urban fantasy, and it's like Harry Potter for adults or whatever, you know, which is kind of what I often say. And then they want more, and they're interested, and they're actually, and I get now, like, we had people over for dinner, and they were like yesterday, and they were like, oh, da da da, and what do you, and it becomes a topic of conversation. But old me would have been like, oh, and let's, you know, I don't want to talk about it, and let's not, and you know, and then they react to that, and then they think it's nothing because you make it nothing because of how you talked about it.
Yeah. I've got one friend who talks, he wherever we are, if we're out, he'll go, Wendy's a writer, and I'm just like, dude, put a sock in it.
I have a husband that will tell the waiter.
No, the server. Yeah. Exactly. And, and he's like, how many books do you reckon you've sold, Wend? And rah, rah, rah. And and then, boy, you know, the whole conversation is, and I'm just like, I look at him and say, zip it, dude, you know? And he's like,
but it's nice. He's proud of you. Yeah. And he's helping you to feel proud
of yourself. Maybe there's a lesson in here is that sometimes it can be very hard to recognize your own biases. And so maybe this could be kind of just to round this out, because we are heading towards the is that it can be very difficult to recognize your own. So maybe that's where you get together with others, like face to face or online, you know, a couple of trusted writer friends, and talk about how you view things. Maybe start with marketing, because that's often easier to start with, to identify biases, because it's not kind of about your it's how you sell your work or how you promote your work, not necessarily about you. So it can be a little easier to start with the external first before you work on the internal biases. That's just my opinion.
And lots of people have lots of biases around marketing, i.e. I can't do marketing. I have no idea how to do marketing.
Or the old chestnut that if you know, your books are valuable, your time's valuable, therefore you shouldn't put something up for free. You know, I mean, that still comes up all the time in different groups. You know,
so, everyone is different. I just want to say, if you don't believe in you, no one else will.
Exactly. That's what bias is often about believing in yourself and thinking that it's,
Well, it's usually often a protection thing too, whether that's a subconscious or a conscious, it's often it. So we believe in you, people. Come join us at spargirlspodcast.com or on Patreon at Spargirls Podcast. If you join at the $10 a month tier, you get us. You get us as your writer peeps and with our other superstars in our Facebook group.
Good sheet of information.
Now, talking of bias, it took us 7 years to try and recoup some costs for Patreon to get over our own fear of that. So we very, very much appreciate everybody that supports us on that, whether it's buying us a coffee, sending us a hug, or supporting us at a higher tier. We really appreciate you all, and every level is appreciated. So thank you so much.
Awesome.
That's cool. Well, thank you all for joining us in the spa today. We've loved having this conversation with you all. Hope you're all furiously writing down your biases as I speak. but that's us for another week in the spa. We'll be back again next week. But for now, farewell.
Bye.